Hello, welcome back to the Trotters for One podcast. Have a bit of a throwback episode today. How to transition to the foreign field and not croak. Six essential steps. Now, this is material that Elizabeth and I presented at the International Conference on Missions back in 2013. You will hear me introduce Elizabeth. She is going to present this these six essential steps for about 20, 30 minutes, and then there's about 30 minutes of Q&A. So we believe this material still, even after being on the field for 8 years and watching a lot of people come and some go. And so it made it into the early chapters of our book, Serving Well. So you can see the printed form of this material there. All right, I'll see you next time. Thanks. Bye.
The sign says, "Culture shock is rarely terminal." A smart aleck friend of ours said, "But when it is," thank you. My name is Jonathan, and I am on the field with my family, Elizabeth, and we have four kids. Two of them are here today. We've been in Phnom Penh, Cambodia for about 2 years. There was some miscommunication in the thing, and it says that I'm speaking, but you don't want me to speak. You want her to speak because she's the brainchild behind this. She's got the good stuff to say, and I just want to emphasize that you got to listen to her because I've been on the field with her and seen a lot of other hers on the field and a lot of other hymns on the field. And the truths that she has pulled out from observing other missionaries, other young people on the field, are extremely, extremely valuable. And she has been such a blessing. If she weren't as amazing as she is on the field, this would have been much, much more difficult. Our family would have crashed. And she's amazing and awesome, and you really should listen to her. I think that's all. I'm the PowerPoint guy today. So I just want to pray over my wife as we get started, and then we'll go from there. Dear God, thank you so much for never leaving us alone. You are an amazing God, and you have a heart for the nations and for the people of Cambodia and for families. And I thank you for blessing me with the wife of my youth, and I pray that you will speak through her. Speak your truth through her with grace and mercy. God, teach your ways. In Jesus' name, amen.
I was able to come and meet a few of you. I really have to get close. But I wasn't able to meet everybody. And I was just wondering how many of you are planning on going and being missionaries sometime in the future? Could you like raise your hand so I know? Are there any of you here who are trying to be support people or training people for getting to the field? Or this is all like pre-missionary? Okay. All right. Just wanted to know. Yes. Okay. What I'm going to share today are six steps. They're really practical steps you can take before you get to the field and that you really need to take before you get to the field to make life on the field so much easier and so much better. I am going to list them off here. But I just want to say first that we are not geniuses. We did not know to take these steps. Our sending agency, Team Expansion, and our sending church, Red Bridge Church of Christ, guided us through these steps and sort of required things. And sometimes we didn't always understand why they were telling us to do certain things. So I'm going to share with you what those are. The first one, these are sources of stress on the field, or you can eliminate partially, is being underfunded. The second one is something that I call the trailing spouse, and I'll define that later. Marital problems or personal problems. And then the pornography and sexual sin actually gets its own category. So that's number four. Then I'm going to talk about teams. And the last one is about training you should get. Now, I wrote this about 6 months in living in Cambodia, and I was thinking it in terms of families, marriages, and all that, but it actually, you can apply all this stuff if you're single. So I'll just point that out right now. So number one, margin. Okay, we want to talk about having enough money raised for going overseas. If you don't raise enough money to live on, you don't have what we call financial margin. But you also don't have emotional and mental and time margin because you're so worried about how the bills are going to get paid and can I get a good price at the market and all that. So if you think about how stressful financial troubles are in America, it's even worse when you're in another culture. So you don't want to reduce your budget just to get there faster. It is worth it to raise it fully. We modeled our budget, just for an example, off of a missionary that was already in Cambodia. That's where we are. And we added 10%. And we were actually really glad we added 10% because we really needed that. When you first move over there, you don't know what a fair price is. Prices fluctuate. You need to not have to worry about your financial stress then. So that is the first one. The next one is something called the trailing spouse. Okay, I'm going to define trailing spouse for you. It's a person who follows his or her life partner to another city or country because of work or a job. It is not always religious, as it is in missions, and it is also not always a woman, as it was in my case. It is often a woman, but trailing spouses are often unhappy. And I was a trailing spouse. My husband here wanted to be a missionary since he was about 10 years old. And we fell in love when we were in high school and got married when I was 18. And I was just so in love. And I just thought, this is far away. I thought, we'll be missionaries when we're 40. I mean, and when you're 18, that's never going to happen. So about 5 years ago, he just says to me out of the blue, I want to be a missionary. And I said, no. And so that started our journey. We started applying with Team Expansion, our sending agency, but I didn't want to do it. And I thought I could be really special and spiritual. I could be a great hero of the faith, and I could be like Sarah following her husband Abraham. God didn't speak to Sarah. God spoke to Abraham, and they went out to a country they didn't even know. And I was going to be a woman of faith like that. But when it came down to it, I actually didn't have the faith to follow God through my husband. We started the process. I was sometimes supportive, sometimes not supportive. But when it came to setting an actual date to leave, I said no. And so this was a crisis point for us. And we took a week, and Jonathan went off and he talked to God. And I went off and I talked to God, and we didn't talk to each other about that issue. And at the end of that week, came back together, and I did feel the call. Before that, his call was so strong, and I had trouble hearing from God. I really tried. The rest of that story is in the Tell magazine. Team Expansion has a magazine they put out every year, and I wrote an article about the trailing spouse, being a trailing spouse, and how giving up that label and being able to have a call. I do feel called to Cambodia. I can't imagine doing anything else. I feel like I was made to do this, and when awful things happened that first year, and even once or twice, Jonathan said, I brought you here. This is my fault. I said, no, I chose to come here. So if you are single, obviously, you go to the field if you have a call, or you don't, if you don't have a call. And if you're married, it's just really, really important for both spouses to feel this call to be sent out and to be missionaries. We've known people, we've known stories, and it's not very sustainable. If you're a trailing spouse, you're unhappy and you want to go back home. And maybe it takes a year or two, maybe it takes 5 years, but those couples generally don't last long term on the field. So please, it's better to figure this out before you go. Tell magazines are on the back table, in case you want to pick up that story. And there's lots of other work going on with Team Expansion that's in the Tell magazines, too. Okay, the next one is about marriage. And we had been married for about 10 years when our elders said, you need to go to counseling before you go to the field. And I said, no. I said, my marriage is fine. I am doing great. And haven't you seen everybody else? Because we had a great marriage, and we loved each other, and we were best friends, and we communicated easily. But we did it anyway. which I'm really glad that we followed older people's advice. And we went to see a counselor, and I went in quite sure I had no problems. And we got in the counselor's office, and I actually found out that I did. So he was very heart-focused, and we worked through a lot of junk that was in our hearts before we left. Because that stuff comes out when it's hard to live in a different culture. The sounds, the language, the smells, the different way of interacting, and it brings all these triggers you have on the inside and all the stuff that's on the inside, it comes out. So it's good to start addressing that before you go to the field, and that's the same with people who are not married. I would recommend going to see a counselor, start talking about the stuff that's on the inside so that you aren't really confused over there and you're like, what is going on with me? So that's marriage counseling. That's the counselor. Okay, I'm going to hand this over to my husband. He's going to talk about this for a little bit, man to man. So
it turns out that a lot of guys have porn problems and addictions, sexual purity addictions, and that comes out big time on the field. We live in Cambodia. You may have heard of Rafa House. There's a lot of stuff in Cambodia that is just nasty and is just so wrong. And we got there and we realized this is the case because on every street corner there is a brothel. If it's not a brothel, it's a massage parlor. This thing on the right-hand side, you can barely see it, says massage, 10,000 real. That's $2.50. I pass between our house and my language school, which is about a five-minute drive. I pass at least three massage parlors with girls sitting out there. The picture on the left is a KTV karaoke bar. There's a lot more than singing that happens there. In fact, it's a hotel as well. It's a brothel. And if you as a man go to the mission field and you have not worked through and gained victory over sexual sin, you will crash or something will happen. You will not have intimacy with your spouse. It will just be a mess. Please don't go until you get that resolved. Now, we knew that that was true, but we didn't really fully understand the depth of the importance of this until I had a conversation with a guy who's done his doctoral research in Cambodia with Western missionaries in Cambodia. And his doctoral research found that approximately 50% of the expat or the Western men serving God in Cambodia have what could legitimately be called a sexual addiction. Not just they've looked at porn in the last 6 months, but they answered this survey in such a way that he, as the psychologist, said it fits the criteria for actual sexual addiction. 50% of the Western men serving in Cambodia. I don't know how they do it when on every block there is a brothel and a massage parlor, because if you have an addiction to porn, it's going to quickly degrade into visiting prostitutes. And we have seen that. We have seen people come to Phnom Penh on survey trips to see how they're going to serve God and then find out later they visited a prostitute while they were on their survey trip. That's not the way to do missions. That's just not. And in fact, the other research that this guy has done in Cambodia, his research has found that full 10% of the Western Christian men in Cambodia, 10%, have visited prostitutes. That should shock us big time. We serve with Team Expansion. We've just heard from their equipping department that of all of the people who apply to work with Team Expansion during the application process, 65% of the people, this isn't just men, but 65% of the people have some sort of sexual purity issue that they have to get resolved before they go to the field. So I just want to say from our perspective, a lot of guys that I've talked to, they think, oh, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay, I've gained victory over this, and then they go, whoa, no, they didn't. They hadn't really gained victory over this. It's a big deal. Team Expansion actually wants you to go through addiction counseling if you have that issue before they will clear you to go to the field. So what some people do is say, well, forget the missions agency, we'll just go by ourselves because God has called us. God is not calling you to serve in Southeast Asia or maybe anywhere abroad if you have unresolved sexual sin or sexual addiction sin. It's not that that God doesn't love those people. That's not what I'm saying. But you do not want to put yourself and your family in a position, especially like in Southeast Asia, if you have an ongoing sexual purity issue. That's, I think, that all that I needed to speak to that, man to man. And I get asked all the time on the street, and I'll just be real honest with you, when I'm practicing language and walking out on the street, the normal question that I get asked as a white guy is, how many girlfriends do you have? Oh, I'm married. Oh, yeah, we know you're married, but how many girlfriends do you have? I'm married, I follow Jesus, and I love my wife. Well, yeah, I know, but, and one guy actually argued with me. He asked me, how many Cambodian girls have you slept with? I'm married, I follow Jesus, and he argued with me on the street. This is a normal street. These pictures are taken on the main street close to our house. A block from our house is a hotel that rents rooms out at 30 minutes, in 30-minute blocks. Then he argued with me and said, no way, you're a white guy. We know your type. You're a white guy, you have money, you live in this country. How many Cambodian girls have you slept with? That's the environment that you're moving to. If you wrestle with sexual purity, it's going to be in your face all the time. And it's much safer to get that resolved here in the safety of a church with a local authority structure and when everything else in your life hasn't changed and added all the stress that an international move will add. So does that work for you? Okay.
I just thought it would be stronger coming from him. Okay, so the next thing I'm going to talk about is teams. This is our team, and we love them. They're amazing. And I love the idea of teamwork. I love working on teams. We've done team training at Team Expansion, and I feel so satisfied when we work together with people and we get a job done. So teams are this amazing thing, but they can also really degrade into something that's very stressful. Sometimes missionaries actually go alone and they don't have a team, and that's very lonely. But if you have a team and the interpersonal stuff is just not working out, that can be a huge source of stress. And we've known people who've burnt out and left the field because of the team issue. So this is something to be aware of, getting ready to go overseas. If you do the training that I talk about in my next point, you will have some conflict resolution training. But I just, it's good to go overseas with this commitment to serving God. And that commitment to serving God needs to be stronger than your commitment to your team, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if they will burn out and they will leave and you'll be alone and you don't know what you need to do. But is your commitment to serving God stronger than that? So that's the team thing. The last one, this is at one of our initial trainings, and a lot of Team Expansion workers go to closed fields, and so that's why we blotted out some of their faces. But Team Expansion requires you to go through a lot of training, and it was really, really good. I'm going to talk about two of the main trainings that they require, because you can do this too. No matter what agency you're with, or if you're not with an agency, although I highly recommend going with an agency. One is called the Kairos course, and if you have never heard of it, there you can actually go to the Team Expansion booth and get information on the Kairos course. It is a worldview course. It talks about missions and how God wants to reach the whole world, and how it turns the Bible on a different, like it flips it upside down and just makes it all about how God loves everybody, not just us, and it changed the way I saw the Bible. It was a life-changing experience, so go take that course. And then the other thing is Mission Training International in Colorado. It's also called MTI, and it can be one of the more pricey things you'll do before you get to the field, but every penny is worth it. And we learn stuff there, interpersonal stuff, team stuff, how to adjust stuff for our kids that we used in our first 6 months. Literally every day we used that material. It was that valuable. So even if you've been to seminary, even if you've been to Bible college, I consider MTI to be essential. It should be required, because it teaches you how to live in a cross-cultural context. There's also some language help there too, but the biggest help is how to live you personally and survive cross-culturally. And then I want to mention something else. We had been involved in volunteer or paid ministry for several years before we went overseas. And I have never heard of this being a requirement anywhere, but I would highly recommend it. when you work in ministry, you have to set boundaries between your family time, your personal time, and your work time. And if you get experience doing that here, where you can speak the language and you understand people, you will be able to take that practice with you when you go overseas. And we were in ministry long enough that we had frustrations with people, and we thought, why is this person not changing? Why are they still making these bad decisions? And sometimes you work with someone for years, and sometimes things change and sometimes things don't. And that will happen overseas as well. So you will run into nationals and you want to help them, or and nothing's happening, or it takes a long time for something to happen. So that is just a lot of mission work is ministry in a cross-cultural setting. So if you get ministry experience here, you can apply some of those lessons overseas, and it can reduce your stress. So, just gonna run through it one more time, the 6 points. You need to build margin into your budget and raise it fully before you go. Team expansion actually won't clear you to leave and get on a plane until you've raised 100%, and that is very wise of them. If you are married, do whatever you can to ensure that you both have a strong missionary call and you want to serve God overseas. And again, if you're married, you really need to make your relationship, your marriage relationship, the strongest relationship that you have on earth, because it needs to be your rock. It's going to be stable when everything else is not stable. Another something I forgot to mention about this is that whether you are single or whether you are married, you really need a good friend overseas. A missionary told me before we moved that she had been a missionary for a long time, and she'd always prayed but when they moved, God, give me a friend, give me a best friend, a bosom friend, and God always answered that prayer. So she told me to do that, and so I did. And when I'd lived in that country 1 week, and I had not even recovered from jet lag, I met this woman, and she is my best friend overseas. And so that's just my testimony, that you need a friend, and God will give you one. You have to ask him. Then there was the pornography thing, which really needs to be dealt with before you leave, because it's too hard to handle on the field. Team stuff and how that can really be great or it can really be not great. And then again, the pre-missions training, which I said the two most helpful things were MTI and Kairos, and then just serve somewhere. Just get some ministry experience and serve somewhere here before you leave. I want to end on a scripture that means a lot to me, because when I said no to serving overseas, I didn't know if God was going to be with me. And even when I said yes, I wasn't quite sure. And so I said yes, and I said, God, please be with me. And he was. And I can say 2 years later, he has been with me. He is with you, and he will be with you, and he will never leave you. So I'm going to read from Psalm 139. O Lord, you have examined my heart and know everything about me. You know when I sit down or stand up. You know my thoughts, even when I'm far away. You see me when I travel and when I rest at home. You know everything I do. You know what I'm going to say, even before I say it, Lord. You go before me and follow me. You place your hand of blessing on my head. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me, too great for me to understand. I can never escape from your spirit. I can never get away from your presence. If I go up to heaven, you are there. If I go down to the grave, you are there. If I ride the wings of the morning, if I dwell by the farthest oceans, even there your hand will guide me, and your strength will support me. I could ask the darkness to hide me and the light around me to become night, but even in darkness I cannot hide from you. To you the night shines bright as day. Darkness and light are the same to you. I live on the farthest oceans, and God is there. I will answer any questions that you have. And if we run out of time for questions, I would just love to talk to you and answer your questions, have conversations afterwards outside this room.
As you're pondering questions, if you have any, we're probably going to get you out of here on time, which I think is amazing, because I always enjoy time. But we didn't mention a statistic that is very humbling for us, and that is that 50% of missionaries who leave their home country and go to another field do not return after their first term. In other words, they go to another country, they serve for one term, and then they come back. 50%. And if these six ingredients or six essentials can help someone effectively prepare for the field so that they don't become part of that 50% who meant to stay, but something happened or something didn't happen and they returned, then it would be worth it. The call is too strong and the need is too great and money is too valuable for the church to be spending so much sending people who are going to flame out because they weren't adequately prepared. It's just too important for that. So if you have any questions for either of us or just for her, go for it.
Okay. The question is, if you have children, what did you do to prepare to go overseas? And actually, MTI has a program for children. And so our older boys, who are now 8 and almost 10, they were 6 and almost 8 when we went to MTI. And they talk about being a third culture kid, and they talk about language stuff and language learning. And our kids actually love learning Khmer. Khmer is the language group, or the language that we speak. He's great at it. I'm not great at it. The kids aren't great at it, but they have fun with it. And so they talk about that kind of stuff and how you don't really belong to your parents' passport culture, which is American. You don't really belong to your host culture, which for us is Cambodia. You're some sort of blend in the middle. And so you have distinct needs and special strengths and all that. So that really helped our kids. They talk about goodbyes, which is huge on the field. And it is probably the number one thing I dislike about living on the field, is there's people leaving all the time. No, just for different reasons. It's not always bad. But you have to say goodbye. And so they teach you how to say goodbye well. And so that was one of the main things that we did.
I've had the blessing of working with a bunch of international teenagers in Phnom Penh. We didn't sign up to do that, but it just sort of fell to us. I was a youth pastor here, Rock On Youth Pastors, Funky Facial Hair Youth Pastors. You all know one of them, you know what I'm saying. And in working with all these TCKs, or all these third culture kids, I've just had the blessing of being able to ask them, hey, I have four of you. I have four third culture kids. What was it like growing up in Cambodia? What did your parents do that was good? I never asked, you know, what did your parents do that was terrible? I never asked that, but, like, what was good? And these third culture kids, in just observing them, their parents love them well. And we spoke with an international youth pastor, actually, and when right after we got there, we had her over to our house, and we said, what do we need to know about raising children over here? And she said, you know, the families that are doing well, for the most part, their children do well. And the families that are struggling, their children struggle. And this isn't a pie in the sky. If you are perfect, your children are going to be perfect. But it is just recognizing if the husband and the wife and the family culture is healthy, then those children are going to grow up and identify with that. I mean, our children are little, so I'm not assuming that everything's going to be peachy keen in our family. However, the experience that we have heard from other people, they've said that the most important culture is actually your family culture. It's not your passport culture. It's not American culture. And it's not Cambodian culture. Those aren't the two biggest influencers in our children's life. The wealth of advice that we've gotten has said your family culture is what will define your children. And that's been really freeing for us. And we actually use that phrase all the time with our children. We talk about our Trotter family culture. We are loud. We like to laugh. We live in a row house, and the neighbors always hear us laughing, and they say, "Johnny, why are you laughing?" I'm like, "I'm just laughing with my children." I mean, so we actually had to institute restaurant rules so that our kids knew that when we went to a restaurant, we couldn't do the same things we did at home. So it was a shorthand way. So that has been really good for our family to even use the words culture, because they've been trained in culture to use the word culture and say, this is our family culture. So then even when we dropped our boys off today at a new friend's house, we said, their family culture may be different. They only have two girls, so it's going to be a little cross-cultural, but it's worked for them. They have a framework for that. So does that answer your question?
I'm going to put another plug in for the whole trailing spouse idea, because a guidance counselor at an international school there who grew up as an MK in Asia and Africa said that the number one predictor then is actually how the mom is doing. If the mom likes the culture, the kids like it. If she doesn't like it, they don't. So, again, that's the thing. Both of you need to be on board with it, like 100%.
And again, those are generalizations, obviously, but that's what we have to work with. Other questions?
Sickness. I didn't know we would get so sick. And it hasn't been most of us, but he's been really, really sick. So every September and every October, something really major happens. So that was a surprise for me. And I'm actually sort of glad I didn't know going in. But now you know. God bless you.
Yeah. Typhoid fever is a booger, but... I would say that the thing that surprised me the most was how many missionaries did not get along with each other and the animosity that existed among missionaries. Cambodia has a decent, I think, unless you're going to a brand new, unengaged field, there will be missionaries already there. And what I was blown away by was how acid-like some of those relationships were with each other and how much they bad-mouthed each other. And we showed up, and we were like, you can't. Well, we don't need to be their friends, because pretty soon they'll be doing that to us. And so that really, you have to be aware of that on the mission field. There are people on the mission field in Cambodia that we just don't hang out with anymore. Seriously. We said shortly after we arrived, okay, this person is not healthy for us, because they're always talking bad about the country and other missionaries and other missions. And, you know, a lot of people are doing a lot of different things and different approaches and different worldviews. And you know what? They're following Jesus. And I may do something different. I may feel called to do something different, but I am not going to badmouth them. But I was totally shocked and really, really discouraged. And I would say borderline depressed 2 or 3 months in when I was faced with this complete disunity. It's not complete disunity. There is in Phnom Penh, we found the people. In fact, one of the blessings of working with the teenagers is that we found the people who have been there 10 years or longer, because most of them came when their children were little. And so we sort of had this natural in to the grown-ups who arrived in Cambodia when their children were little, and they've been there 10, 15 years now, so their children are older. And they have a very different perspective. So any advice, practical advice, would be when you arrive on the field, don't just hang out with the people who know nothing like you. The people who are your age or younger or your as little experience as you. Find the people who have been there and are happy and pester them with questions. And that's what we did. Hey, you look happy. You have happy teenagers. What did you do? I am not even joking. I spoke at a couple youth events, and during the meals, I sat down with the moms and I said, I'm new here. I do not want to pretend that I know anything. What's the biggest mistake that people like me make? And this one lady, she literally jumped over the table. She's like, arriving and thinking they know everything. Okay. But you know what? She had been in Cambodia for 20 years. She had a healthy marriage and happy children, teenagers. I'm going to listen to her. So, yeah. But that was a big shot. Anyway, my soapbox is now removed.
Question over here.
Before, I worked as a youth pastor before we went, and I worked as a trauma nurse at a level 1 trauma center, which is about the same as working as a youth pastor, in my opinion. And so I have some medical background. In Phnom Penh, in our context, we do have access to medical care, and it's sufficient. If there isn't,
our teammates are doctors.
Yeah, and that's really handy too.
That's really
pediatrician and the OBGYN and internal medicine. So it's really helpful. But and you can buy any medicine over the counter there, which is also helpful, depending on what you need. But I would say that it's not about the knowledge. For us, the difficulty wasn't about the knowledge. It wasn't about healthcare knowledge. Because if you're on the field, you're going to have internet access. You're going to know a doctor you can email. I mean, the doctors that I worked with here in the States were when I was really, really sick, were on Facebook with Elizabeth. And, you know, most of you, if you get to the field, you're going to have internet access and WebMD and all that. So I would say that the stressor is not the lack of medical knowledge on the field. The stressor is the fact that you're just really sick. And it's really hot. And it's dirty. And so when I'm down for the count, she's managing life with four little kids and all of that stuff while I'm, you know, curled up in the fetal position for 2 weeks. So in that situation, if you don't have that, I'm just going to dovetail onto what she said. If she were a trailing spouse still and I'm sick, holed up in bed for 2 weeks at a time, what does she feel? I can't believe you brought me here. I told you this was going to be terrible. It's your fault I'm here. I mean, it goes downhill really fast. But instead, I'm like, I'm so sorry. And she's like, no, God called us here. Whatever. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go die now. I mean, she's got it under control. So the trailing spouse issue affects everything, not just arriving on the field. When things go haywire, that issue comes back. If it's there.
Yeah, we know of a mission agency that won't send you at all unless both of you have a call. And I used to think that was really extreme, but now that I've lived on the field, I think, no, that's very wise. It's not extreme. It should be required.
The question is about setting realistic expectations, and we have heard from many people that you cannot expect to operate at 100% of your normal capacity at all, ever, in a foreign context. Like, at the best, we've heard missionaries say, we've been in France for 10 years, and I'm just now feeling like I'm running at about 60% capacity of what I could accomplish in the States. And so for some people, that's if they're a type A, need to accomplish like 10 things a day, that can be a real big stressor because you're like, I can't. I went to the store. I fixed the toilet, and I had to learn the word for glue. I mean, these aren't like, whoa, I'm going to send to my supporters, guess what I did today, you know? Yay. Yeah, did you know there's a difference between the word for wife and, I mean, it's just like, people laughed at me today. Wow. Realistic expectations. And actually, Team Expansion really helped with that because they said, we don't want you to do full-time ministry or anything that looks like full-time ministry until you've been there for 2 years. And that was really helpful because it's very much a temptation to go and say, like, there's so much work to be done. We need to just jump in. And when people if you plan to be there long-term, like Team Expansion, they say you have to do language and culture. The dividends that it will pay are huge. And they call the first term a foundational term. That is, you're laying the foundation. You can't really see progress. You're not technically accomplishing anything. But if you try to build a structure without doing the foundation, you're going to accomplish something. You're going to be able to send back to your reporters and say, look what I've built. But it's not going to be as sturdy as if you take the time to lay the foundation. I liken it to the hospital. I worked in the ER. And, you know, people with a great heart could walk into the waiting room. The hospital I worked at is just a couple blocks down the street. And we sometimes had 60 people in the waiting room waiting for 7 hours to be seen. And you could have a very caring, loving person walk into that waiting room and say, there's so many sick people. I'm going to start taking care of them because I love them. No. No. The doctors that are going to take care of them have taken the time outside of the hospital. They have done training, the nurses, the staff, they have been trained and they have practiced off-site. And when they were trained and kind of knew what they were doing, they showed up. They didn't have any less compassion than the people who say, look, they're sick people, I'm going to go take care of them. They did the training. And I don't know why people think that missions is different. And they go, oh, there's dying people, or oh, there's girls being trafficked, I'm going to go rescue them. And they don't get any training. And they don't know anything about missions, and they have no idea what they're doing, and they just bust in there like the heroes they think they are, and they crash and burn. Now, there are some stories here and there, and people have written books who did that and succeeded, but that is the exception and not the rule. And so I think of it like that. If you see someone who's so gung-ho to go that they don't need training, think of a hospital. If you show up at the hospital sick, do you want someone who really loves you but never went to medical school? Or do you want someone who took the time and put the energy and the investment in to actually learn something? Now, neither of us has a Bible degree, so I'm not really talking about Bible training, although I think that's really, really important. I'm talking about life learning. I'm talking about culture learning, language learning. Who are the people that you're going to love? It's not just people you can go in as the American and, you know, lasso and rescue. These are people, and they have a culture, and they have a history, and you have to learn that. So depending on your goal, if your goal is short term and you link up with an existing ministry that's there and the existing ministry knows the culture and can funnel you into what to do, that might be different. But if you're going to do long term missions, the investment will be worth it, hopefully. I mean, we only know about transitioning to the field, and I want to say that very clearly. We have only transitioned to the field. I have Cambodian friends, and we talk about Jesus, but I don't have glorious work to talk about. But we have transitioned to the field. And you know, talk to me in 20 years, and I'll probably say that I know much less, because that seems to be how it works. But I don't know.
There was another question. Oh. Okay. Well, the first 2 years are... Okay, when you get out there, what are you doing as a missionary? Missionaries do a lot of different things, and sometimes they do relief and development work. Now, we are church planting missionaries, which means like straight up evangelism, and you're trying to make disciples who make disciples, and that it's a chain reaction, and then it gets bigger and it explodes the gospel all over the place. And so that's why you have to learn the culture. And he's actually taken tests by... from other missionaries to test your language and to test your cultural knowledge, because you really have to understand their religion. So Buddhism is our country's religion. So he has to understand how they think. And you can't present the gospel in the same way there as you do here, because Jesus giving you eternal life doesn't mean anything to them. Jesus saving you from your sins doesn't mean anything to them. So you have to learn a different way to introduce the concept. So after he has just a couple more months of that because of being sick and stuff, he wants to study some more. And then he's just going to be on the street with his people.
What was your question specifically about us and what we're doing, or the missionary on the field? Right. Absolutely. And if you start on the road, you may end up in a different place. We started off thinking that I would do medical work there. And through our training, God really lit us up for really basic church planting. And let me take the opportunity and the question, what does a missionary do? And I'm going to say this very clearly. They can do very different things. But my opinion is that every country has a sin tree. That is, sin has taken root in that country and in that people group, and it is producing terrible things, branches of sin. And in Cambodia, those branches are alcoholism, spousal abuse, child abuse, human trafficking, terrible branches on a sin tree. America has a sin tree as well. It's different. It looks different, but there's still the root of sin that wrecks people's lives, whatever country, whatever context. The branches will be different, and the bad fruit will be different, but there is a sin tree. I believe very strongly that the missionary's task is not just to chop off branches. It's fine. You just are looking into the human trafficking world or that type of thing, relief and development, all that stuff can be great to relieve things. But and I'm so glad those people are there. And hear my heart, I'm not downplaying anybody at all, because we are good friends with the Rafa House people. I love the work they're doing. Hopefully nobody takes a snippet of this audio recording and changes it. I love Rafa House and the work they're doing. But what we feel like God is calling us to do, and what I believe is the ultimate goal of missions, is to chop down that tree. Every country has a sin tree. You can lop off branches all day long, but that tree is still there. And what has the power to rip that thing out of the ground? The gospel of Jesus Christ. And what is the entity that it is that is designed to do that and to plant that? It is the local church. And so my passion, what drives me, is to plant the local church. Because if in Cambodia, for example, the local church explodes and people follow Jesus and disciples are being multiplied, those branches die because you've ripped out the root system and you've cut it down. I can't do that. I can maybe snip some branches. I cannot uproot that tree. But the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ can. And I am a messenger of that gospel, as we all are. Well, that would be my plea, is what does a missionary do? They do whatever it takes to see the gospel planted in a people group to eradicate that sin tree, whatever the context is.
If you want practical help on developing a plan for that, there's something called Jonathan Training, and that's not named after him. But our agency requires at least their team leaders to go through it, and they help you figure out what your target people group, the demographic you're going after, what your plan is, and practical stuff for that kind of thing. So that's a practical step you can do. And you can take it here, but also there are places overseas where you can take it after you've learned the language and the culture and you really figure out, who am I aiming at? So,
yeah. And like I said, a lot of missionaries do a lot of different things. In Cambodia, and even among the Team Expansion universe, a lot of people are doing different things, including relief and development or business as missions. But their lifeblood is to see the gospel planted in multiplying churches around the world. I would say that is a valid life goal. And the church, I think the church better be excited about that.
Question?
Yes, sorry.
We have about 10 minutes left. You don't want to live really, really way above the people, but you also don't want to live exactly, if you're in a very poor country, because you won't be able to survive that way long term. So we live in a sort of middle class neighborhood. We actually pay way less in rent than anybody we know, but any other missionaries we know. So you just have to make that call, like, are you married? Okay, so you talk about it with your wife. What is important to her? So for me, I need a hot shower. I need a bedroom with clean sheets and an air conditioner at night. I don't use it during the day, but if I have that, I can do anything, even in the heat. So you figure out what are the things your wife and you have to have, and you make sure you get those, and hopefully the rest don't matter.
Emphasis on sustainability has to attach to the missionaries as well. And that has to be balanced, though. And missions agency and the missionaries on the field can help. But that's one area where missionaries clash, is because everybody's judging everybody else on their standard of living. And that's just terrible.
There are classes at MTI on guard for that.
Yeah.
It's a personal thing.
Yeah, and it's really going to depend on the field. But what she was saying about sustainability is almost paramount. If you live so low that you can't stay there, what good is it? It's not holier to live dirtier and to leave sooner. Okay.
Oh, I think he was finished.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, sir. So the question is, have we ever had an instance where we said, oh my goodness, what have we done? Yeah, that happened about 24 hours after landing. when I was sitting in the corner sobbing, saying, oh my God, what have I done? I brought my family here. Our girls got eaten up with mosquitoes the first night, and we were afraid of dengue fever.
We didn't have luggage.
Furniture.
We didn't
our
have
luggage
clothes.
Hadn't got there. So, yes, those moments will come. And I, the biggest strength for me, I mentioned this in the luncheon yesterday, was when Jesus spoke to Satan, he said, you must worship the Lord your God and serve only him. And when I came to a wall where I didn't know anything else, I wasn't sure about anything else. I wasn't sure about my call. I wasn't sure that we were supposed to be there. I wasn't even sure about God. I could say with Jesus, I will worship the Lord my God, and I will serve only him. And that simple truth pulled me through some of those exact moments. I think it's almost, you should almost assume that you will have those where you hit the wall. You will have those. The question is, did you have any training that you can go back to? Or do you have support system? We sent out a flare prayer email.
That's what I was going to say.
We weren't planning to. We weren't planning on communicating back for about a month. We wanted to just be there. And after a few days in, we were like, especially Elizabeth's like, we've got to tell people we need prayer. And we sent a prayer email out like, we're afraid our kids are sick. She got an intestinal illness on like day three, and we were trying to find a doctor and medicine. And yeah, and we were, and I was, see, in this strange turn of fate, I was the one who had the call. She was the trailing spouse, you know, the weak, not full of faith spouse. And then we show up there, and I'm the blubbering idiot in the corner, and she's the one saying, God has called us here. Oh, I got to stop talking. I'm going to cry right now. But if you don't have that support network, not just a spouse, but I mean like a support network and prayers, we have, I mean, this whole row right here is people that have prayed up for us over and over and over. We send our newsletter out to a couple hundred people, and we know that those people are praying, and we have been so bolstered by their prayers. And when I was sick, I mean, it would have been almost impossible without that prayer support. But you will hit that wall, and you have to know that it's coming. I don't think you have to be afraid of it, but you have to know that you will hit that.
And also, you don't know what to pray at that time, and so that's why you have to have your brothers and sisters to pray for you. And that's another thing about working in a local church before you go, is that you meet these people. You meet these people full of faith, and you've got your support network there, and so when they send you off, they're going to pray for you. And so that was another benefit of having worked in the church beforehand.
Okay, maybe one or two more questions.
Lady, maybe?
Oh, someone over here. I bypassed.
Okay,
sorry.
The two ladies, so.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, it depends on where you're going in the world. We are in the capital city in Cambodia, and there are actually four international schools. One specifically is cheap enough for missionaries, as it's geared more towards missionaries. So that's an option in bigger cities. I don't know where you're planning on going. We homeschool, and we plan to send our children there because it's a little more expensive, maybe in high school. A lot of people in the past have had to send their kids to boarding school or do homeschool, and that was their only option. But there are sometimes international schools which are an option now. You just have to raise that money. It's part of your budget. So.
And I just, before we go to this other question, before my computer dies, Elizabeth has blogged a lot about our 2 years in Cambodia. It's trottersforone.com. In fact, she just posted the bulk of what she talked about today is the latest blog post on there. So if you visit trottersforone.com, you'll see those 6 points. She has a interested in missionary life, and then list out different articles about the yays and the yucks and the germaphobeness and how God called her and all that stuff. And it's all on there. So more resources, including our contact information, if you want to. I will just offer this. We are both very willing to answer questions and emails. We may divert you and say, that's a really complicated question, go talk to Team Expansion. But we will send you in the right direction. We will try to answer our questions or your questions as best as possible. So unashamed plug for trottersforone.com. Okay, and one more last one.
No, we actually have two lists. So we have the newsletter list, and anyone can sign up for it on the website. But we have a specialized group, too, of people we know are praying for us, that we have that strong relationship with, and we trust them to pray for even sensitive issues. So we will talk about sensitive issues with them. We also, because we're with an agency, sometimes there are confidential things that will never, never show up anywhere. And you talk to, we talk to the home office and debrief. We have, I mean, our, both of our families are strong believers, so we talk to them about things, and we have good friends, and our team on the field. So, yeah, you can really, you can diversify all your needs.
I would say your question is basically asking, do we have, like, Facebook friends and Snapchat friends? I mean, like, there's a difference. And we send our newsletter out to about 400 email addresses, and about 6 months in, about a year in, we narrowed that down to the people that we actually knew, people that we knew would pray for us, and that list is really only about 120, if that gives you an idea. And just for the record, we use MailChimp, M-A-I-L-C-H-I-M-P, MailChimp.com, and it we don't get any kickbacks for that, unfortunately, but it's a very, very good email database management thing, and it helps you draft stuff. And so when we had our big list and then we were making it a smaller list, it's very easy to divide that out, and it keeps track. In fact, the interesting point is it tracks the number of opens of each email, and the number of people that open the prayer email, the specific one that we send to just 100 or so people, and the number of people that open the newsletter one that's to 400 people, the total number of opens is almost the same. And so, you know, there are a lot of people who never even open these, but a huge percentage of the prayer one gets opened. And so it's sort of a very tactile way of knowing we're not just sending this out into the abyss. We know people are opening it. And it actually, it may sound cheesy, but it really does feel good to know I just sent out, like, my heart, and the majority of people opened it. Not my heart. Email.
Because a lot of that stuff can be confidential. We say on those, the private ones, don't forward and all that stuff. So, and a lot of people in sensitive fields have to do that anyway. So that's something you can do.
If we're going to be at the team expansion booth for the next couple of hours, if you have other questions, and we'll hang out in here as well. I guess that's it. Thank you guys for coming. We really appreciate your time and your passion. So.